Hello, Nashville, and welcome to Business as Usual. My name is Bailey Badilla. I'm the adult librarian at the Donaldson Branch Library.
And I'm Corey Frederick. I'm the manager at the Goodlettsville Branch.
And we are here with Dr. Randy Bradley, the dean of the Jack C. Massey College of Business, and also professor of supply chain management and information systems at Belmont. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Thanks for being here with us.
Welcome to the show. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Dr. Bradley, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm happy to do that. And again, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to be with you. I've been the dean of the Jack C. Massey College of Business since June of this year, so 2025. Oh, okay. Yeah. Prior to that, I spent 19 years at the University of Tennessee as a faculty member in accounting as well as in supply chain management, with a lot of my time spent in the executive education space. So I had the privilege of teaching students from their sophomore years all the way up to those who were earning PhDs in supply chain management.
Okay, sure.
Before academia, I was a consultant with a large company by the name of Computer Sciences Corporation. Most people now know that as DXC Technologies. And I would say that's really where I started to cut my teeth in the world of business and where I got a little more experience focusing on managing supply chains around and then technology strategy, working across a number of verticals, including aerospace and defense.
Wow. That's
okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I went to UT also, so I'm a fan of that.
Go Vols.
Go Vols.
Jack C. Massey College of Business seems to be pretty active in the Nashville community. Could you talk about some of the college's ongoing projects and how it connects with Nashville?
There are a number of things. When people talk about the Massey College of Business and its connection to the Nashville community, the one thing that probably comes to the surface is what we do in entrepreneurship. And one of the things that we often say is entrepreneurship sits in the Massey College of Business, but we don't own entrepreneurship. And what I mean by that is we believe that entrepreneurship is a social organism. And so it needs to be nurtured, it needs to be developed, but at the same time, it needs to be unleashed. So one of the things that we're working towards is creating an entrepreneurial mindset that is pervasive across the entire university. So you don't have to be a major in entrepreneurship to do entrepreneurial things. Sure. I liken it to someone who says, I grew up on a farm, but it didn't make me a farmer. I did farming things. And that's where we see it. So the ability to identify where there's a need in the marketplace, develop a solution or a set of services that meet that needs, and then build a sustainable model around it to where you can then continue to repeat that course of action. That's one of the things that we do in terms of touching and reaching to the community. So whether it's small business development, if you think about it, we have launched more than 500 student-focused businesses.
Wow.
out of not only just the Massey College, but if you think about it, across Belmont University. And for a university of our size, that's a large number of businesses to have launched. And so when people say, what are you doing in the community? I say it's what we've been doing in the community.
Sure.
You would be hard-pressed to find a venture that is stable now. Even if we take one, Biscuit Love,
okay. Mm-hmm.
That's one of our alums. If you take, what is it, Chai Chi, the Chai Tea restaurant, that's one of our alums.
Okay.
And if you look at some of the corporate buildings in the space where you have coffee shops in the bottom, some of those are run by our alums. And so, again, it's one of those things where we are throughout the fabric of Nashville. And that's something that we pride ourselves on. We like to say we're Nashville's university. Doesn't mean we're the only one in Nashville,
sure.
But it's mean we're deeply entrenched in
sure.
Nashville.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about your research interest, which is supply chain, right? For some business owners currently, what are the importance of having a strong supply chain?
I always say they're mostly afraid of having a weak supply chain.
Yeah.
Particularly when you look at this time of year where we already see Christmas season in full swing in the stores. But the reality is much of that starts around June and July.
Not sure.
Because you think about the vast majority of products that we put on the shelves, they're not manufactured in the U.S. So they have to come from other countries in different continents. And so as a result of that, you have to think about long-term, long-range planning. And, of course, some of the things that have been getting the news or attention in the news have been the issue around tariffs and
sure.
what that actually is going to mean for the actual cost of goods. Well, the reality is this. Tariffs can be good in one sense in terms of they might benefit the government. But on the flip side of that, tariffs are detrimental to those of us who are more downstream, the end consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is we know all costs at the top are passed down. And so things that could have been affordable may no longer be as affordable if there's nothing changing in the economic base of our country. All that supply chain related. where you go to the convenience store, there's a supply chain or global network that makes it possible for what you want to be there, or in some cases might be indicative of why what you're looking for is not there. If you go to the hospital and you want to receive services, services can't be rendered without materials and supplies. Most of those things, again, aren't manufactured in the U.S. If you take any form of medication, the vast majority of generic drugs, if you take the active pharmaceutical ingredients, 85 to 90% of those are produced outside of the U.S. or found outside of the U.S. So again, what that means is you've got to have partnerships with steamship carriers, or what we call the maritime industry. Mm-hmm. You have to have partnerships with airlines. You have to take into consideration our rail system. And then you have to take into consideration our over-the-road truckers. All of those things are vital nodes in a global supply network. And I like to tell executives this. You might make decisions locally, but you're still part of a global system, whether you believe it or not. And so price indices, when we look at the cost of inputs going into the production of goods and services, those things matter. And so every decision you make operationally, you've got to understand what it means for your top line as well as your bottom line. Otherwise, your sustainable business model could truly be disrupted because of our inability to manage a strong supply chain.
It seems like it's really hard for people to try to think that broadly.
Yeah.
You know, how do they get out of that? You know, just, I guess, start thinking globally instead of locally.
Well, I always say we have a choice. We can look at the world through a thimble, mm-hmm. or we can take a set of binoculars. Or maybe the Hubble telescope is probably a better analogy. Yeah, sure. And the reality is that's really what we need. We need a Hubble telescope mindset, where I am monitoring what's happening globally, because at some point it's going to make its way to our door by way of either something coming too soon, too late, not coming at all, or by the time it gets to us, it may not be as affordable as we once thought. I like to tell organizations, the supply chain is not just an operational tactic. Mm-hmm. It is a strategic imperative. Let's bring it down to where most people live. You go to the store, you want to buy a new television for Christmas. Well, what's going to drive the cost of that television? It's not just where it was made. It's not based on who made it, but it's also how long did it take to get here?
Yeah.
So when you start hearing things about there's a dry season in Panama, and so as a result, the water levels are not where they need to be in the Panama Canal, and so that means we cannot accommodate as many ships, and typically you can't accommodate ships moving in two different directions mm-hmm. at the same time. Well, what does that mean for you? That could potentially mean anywhere from another 5 to 10 days on the ocean. And so again, every day that a ship spends on the ocean, that's additional cost for you, because you built into your supply chain how many days it takes to get it from what we call the Eastern Hemisphere to the Western Hemisphere. And so typically you're thinking 15 to 18 days. But what happens when that's 36 days? You just doubled your cost.
Dramatic, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so for the end consumer, we like to talk about why the price is rising when everything around me looks like it's not changing. It's because we're looking through the thimble rather than through the Hubble telescope.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I worked customer service for a transportation company for a few years, Averitt Express.
Yes.
And that really opened my eyes to how the importance of mm-hmm. supply chain and also just how it all works.
Yeah.
I remember you mentioned the Panama Canal a few years ago, a ship turned sideways or something.
Was that the Suez Canal?
That was the Suez Canal. Yeah, the Suez Canal. Yeah.
And I remember that was affecting us
at that time.
I know that people were starting to get a little worried about it.
Right.
It's at
the Evergreen, I believe.
Yeah.
That was stuck. And we said, what was the worst thing about that vessel being stuck? It wasn't that it was stuck. It was the fact that the angle in which it was stuck, all you saw was Evergreen.
Oh.
So every day, you're in the news negatively.
Right.
And it's like, man, I bet they wish it turned the other way.
At least, yeah.
So you couldn't tell who
get a better angle.
Right. Exactly.
Absolutely. Not all press is good press.
No, not in that regard. It's not. Well, you know, you talk about what we saw in Baltimore. Yeah. Remember not long ago when you had a ship that actually it hit a bridge.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, people say, well, how do I get my goods off? Well, reality is you can't.
Right.
Even though yours didn't fall off into the river, so to speak, nothing can come off that particular vessel until we can ascertain who's going to bear some of that risk. And the reality is everybody who had cargo on there bears a portion of that cost.
Sure.
Because that's the agreement that you enter into. Yeah. So when we start talking about risk, resilience, liability, it's important for a supply chain leader to understand, I'm not just moving boxes, I'm affecting lives.
Mm-hmm.
It is a macroeconomic factor that is real, it's felt, and it has a very long tail.
Yeah. So just to, you know, sort of stay on that topic a little bit, what are some practical ways that small business owners can use supply chain analytics to help grow their business?
Well, a couple of things. If I'm running a business, whether it's, it doesn't matter whether it's product-based or whether it's service-based, there are two principles that we're always looking at. One is supply and the other one is demand. So what can I make available, and then who wants what I actually have, or who's pulling for things that I don't have? And so we look at how organizations are using analytics. In some cases, we're trying to do both. In other words, we used to talk about sensing demand, and that's where I see there might be some indicators in the marketplace that there's going to be increased demand for certain things. But then there are also cases where you want to shape demand. Because if all I'm doing is sensing, I may miss it. I may read the wrong indicators or misinterpret the indicators. But if I shape demand, and I always like to use an example of Nike. Nike, you remember they used to have this campaign, it was called Just Do It.
Sure.
Well, the problem is too many people did it. And so what I mean by that, how many times have you seen people wearing Nike eyewear? And so, well, Nike's not known for eyewear. Or you have some of the most unathletic people wearing athletic apparel.
Sure.
Well, that's because they just did it. And so what was Nike doing? With their marketing campaigns, they were not sensing what you wanted. They were shaping what you desired. Yeah. And so if I can shape demand, I can more easily make sure that my supply is right size relative to the demand. And so what has oftentimes been is we look at just in time. And you see that a lot in automotive manufacturing. And what that means is I'm going to have what I need exactly when I need it. One perfect example of that was Mercedes-Benz at their manufacturing facility in Vance, Alabama. It was to the point where you had a vehicle coming down the assembly line. We knew it needed four sets of tires. Well, they're not just four sets of tires arriving. They're four sets of tires specifically for that vehicle. And so when you think about that level of precision, that's where analytics comes into play. Because what happens if I have three of the right ones and one of the wrong? Sure. Then all of a sudden, I'm out of sync, and it disrupts my entire manufacturing process. If you remember what we went through during COVID, when we had a huge surge in demand, but yet the supply couldn't keep up. And I always tell people, you went to the grocery stores, you couldn't find toilet paper. Yeah. Well, did that mean that all of a sudden companies forgot how to produce toilet paper? Did it mean they ran out of the components to make toilet paper? No. The difference was we were asking for more than what was available in a time when people just weren't consuming that much. And it was because it was irrational consumption. And what I mean by that, we were buying what we didn't need for fear that when we needed it, it wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And so that surge in demand affected our ability to match it with supply, which then threw everything out of kilter. I'll give you another example that we saw during that time. When schools shut down and parents became educators, worst thing ever. Maybe second worst. The worst part was that all of a sudden what kids ate changed.
Yeah.
Right? We talked about what we had for breakfast during the sound check. Well, all of a sudden now, kids who didn't eat as much breakfast at home are eating more breakfast at home. Things that you would typically, you didn't typically worry about what you had for lunch because your kids weren't there during the day for lunch.
Sure.
And then I'll tell you another thing. That was in the winter, if you remember. But you know what was the largest spike in addition to cereal? Delicacies like ice cream, ice cream sandwiches, comfort food. During a time where we wouldn't make a lot of ice cream.
Yeah.
Because that's typically what we see late spring, early to midsummer. So what happened is our consumption patterns change, which created demand for things that were in a season when we weren't even ready to produce more of that. So that's what when you talk about where analytics comes into play, the better you can identify the changing of these trigger points, the better you can react to it to ensure you put in the right place, products in the right place at the right time and at the right price.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you.
My pleasure.
So AI. Big topic, I feel, right
have
now.
It's
everywhere.
That should be my middle name now.
But how has, I mean, I feel like AI has impacted most things, you know, music,
absolutely,
movies, everything you see AI app. How has that impacted supply chains over the past few years?
Wow, I've got two answers for you there. One is, I think we still have a lot of people who don't fully understand what it is. And we're looking at it as just the next technological solution. And for those who look at it that way, I think we're missing it. Because what's going to happen and what I see happening is we're using what I consider to be a transformational technology. We're using it for incremental improvement. In other words, people say, I want to improve my my forecast accuracy. You can do that without AI.
Yeah.
If they say, I want to better understand what my customer sentiments are, you can do that without AI. But what you probably would be more challenged to do with AI, and where we spend a lot of time experimenting, is what will people consume or want to consume in the next 5 to 10 years? Are we looking that far ahead? Because that's radical thinking. Or if we're looking in terms of how do we ensure that we don't have disruptions in our supply chain. And when I say disruptions here, I'm not talking about shortages of goods. I'm talking about all the things that affect. When we look at cybercrime in the supply chain, what if I told you the biggest threat is probably not someone hacking into your computers, it's someone hijacking your cargo. Yeah. Tennessee is one of the top 5 states in terms of cargo theft.
Wow.
Interesting, isn't
it?
That
is interesting.
But we don't hear about that on the news. But yet when we say, I always tell people, when I travel the world and I can see a whole chicken being made in front of me, why is that when I go into certain stores here, I can only see thighs?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are we all of a sudden have chickens that are being produced and they only have thighs? Right? I mean, something's not right.
Yeah.
And part of it is, if you look at the types of cargo theft that start to manifest, it is also it's household goods. It's also those things that are in the grocery space. And it's amazing how they're doing it. And a lot of times you can use AI to manipulate a bill of lading, or a manifest, as some people would like to call that, yeah, such that you might have been expecting 4,000 pounds of something, but I've changed that to where you're only expecting 40 pounds of it.
Mm.
And everything else looks the same to you. And you didn't realize that along the way that trailer number got switched to another trailer number, and yet everything looks good when it gets to
right.
you. But what has happened is I infiltrate your systems not to steal your data, but to steal your cargo.
Wow.
And so when you ask me where, unfortunately, we're not looking at it at that vantage point. And there was one financial institution, I won't mention their name here, but one of the things I love when they said they were building out an AI strategy, one of the questions that came to bear, they said, we're going to use it in the area of fraud detection. And someone said, oh, great, you're going to use AI to determine when there's fraud, right? And they said, no, we're going to use AI to create examples of fraud that we've never seen.
Wow.
So that we can see if we're able to detect it. That's the right way of thinking yeah. about AI. If I just say, can you help me better detect it? Incremental improvement.
Sure.
Not recognize and empower the technology. But if I say, show me something I've never seen, create an example that I would never consider, and let's see if my defense system can actually pick up on that.
Up, right?
That's transformational. Absolutely. And so across the supply chain, if all I'm doing is managing and improving inventory management, I'm not getting the value of what that particular solution or technology could actually deliver.
Sounds like we're back at that Hubble telescope.
We are back. Exactly. We are back to the Hubble telescope.
That big picture.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. It is big picture.
Yeah. All right. So one question we ask everybody that comes on our show is, mm-hmm. what's one piece of advice you'd give to someone starting out as an entrepreneur or small business owner?
Wow. I'm gonna give you something that my accountant asked me when I started one of my companies. And the first question was this: do you have a product and service, or do you have a company? Because oftentimes, if you're a small business owner or if you're an entrepreneur, you think about that one thing you're trying to get into the hand of someone else. And everything we talk about is that. Who's going to be your customer? Are you solving a problem someone is willing to pay you for?
Yeah.
And all of those are vital questions, but I think they're temporal or temporary questions.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger question is once you consume that, what will keep you coming back? And that's where it's like, do I have a company
yeah.
or do I have a business, or do I just have a product or service? And I think you've got to realize it has to be something that can be repeatable. There's repeatable consumption of what you're offering. If not, you don't have a business. You just think you do.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, we oftentimes lose sight of our pure business model. What is it going to cost me to make it or make it available? How much will I need to charge so that I make a profit so that I continue to reproduce? And I think those are fundamental questions that I see that many business owners today still struggle with. Understanding tax laws.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, we had the privilege to spend some time in Leeds and London with the Nashville Chamber of Commerce. And one of the things that we noticed at the University of Leeds is right there where they have about 35 suites of companies in that building,
mm-hmm.
the other thing that you saw a tax and a professional advisory firm also have an office there. Because one of the things they realize is you can be as innovative as you want to be, but if you don't understand how to structure a business, if you don't understand the tax implications of where you do business, then you are not going to be able to stay in business.
Yeah.
And so I always say, I never started a business to close it. I started a business to create a legacy. And so we have to be legacy minded, whether we're small businesses become big businesses.
Sure.
If you look at Bridgestone, there was a day when Bridgestone wasn't a big business, where it was not a multinational enterprise. Mm-hmm. Same with Nissan, so forth and so on. Somewhere, someone had to have the vision that I need to have an impact on society that's bigger than where I start.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Great advice. Where would someone go to find out more about you or the Jack C. Massey of College at Belmont?
Well, it's quite easy. You can go to belmont.edu, and you can find us there just by doing /Massey. I'm easy to find just about anywhere. It's Deion Sanders, say I'm not hard to find. You can find me on LinkedIn, Twitter.
Hard to catch, though.
Yeah, I'm hard to catch. That's exactly it.
Hard to catch.
I love that.
Yes, sir.
I need a new T-shirt.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
On the front, I'm not hard to find. On the back, I'm hard to catch. But, of course, you can always go to belmont.edu, and you can find everything you need to know about Massey, about myself, and the great things that we're doing to help improve the lives of all of those in the Nashville community and those in the Middle Tennessee region.
Yeah. Well, great. Great. Thank you so much again, Dr. Bradley, for coming on the show with us. Again, I'm Bailey.
And I'm Corey.
And thank you, Nashville, for listening.